But I'd like to begin this morning with a familiar story from the Christian scriptures, what's known as the parable of the Good Samaritan. And actually, if you look at your order of service, on the front is Van Gogh's presentation of that parable, which is just a lovely painting. So this story, Jesus tells a story. He had been teaching about love of neighbor from the Jewish scriptures. And an expert in Jewish law asked the question, well, who is my neighbor? And Jesus told this parable in response. He said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, which is another religious authority, when he came to the place and saw him, he too passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Then the next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend. Then Jesus said, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The man said, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. This is what I would call a wisdom story. While it's rooted in the Judeo-Christian tradition, it points to a truth that might be affirmed by anyone from any tradition. And you even notice that Jesus does not appeal to any authority except common sense. Who is my neighbor? Now, it does help to know that historically, Samaritans and Jews did not get along. The idea of a Samaritan helping someone who was Jewish would have been seen as scandalous. And that is the power of this parable. This parable is often used, not only in Christian teachings, but in popular culture, to speak against prejudice of all stripes. To speak about an expanded understanding of neighbor. The story challenges us to recognize our inherent connection with others who are different, even others who we see as enemies. This is the lesson of the story. But there's more to it. The New Testament theologian Amy Jill Levine points out that if this was the only lesson of the story, the parable would have stopped when the Samaritan put the man on his animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The story had enough power at that point, he could have stopped there, no problem. But the story doesn't end there. Instead, the Samaritan provides the innkeeper with money for the man's care. And then he goes even further. He says, take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend. In essence, the Samaritan gives the man, the innkeeper, a blank check. So yes, this is a story about being in loving connections with others. It's about learning to expand the bounds of our love. And it's more than that. It's a story about making our vision of loving connection, of beloved community, a tangible, material reality. This idea of neighbor is not some abstract concept. It is something that can become a tangible, material reality. This parable is about the connection between our highest values and our financial resources. In short, it's a story about stewardship. And as you heard, UCS is in the middle of its stewardship season. And stewardship really is vital to the life of this community because we depend on the offerings of our members and friends. All the money that sustains this community comes from within the community. But I know that stewardship season makes some of us a bit uncomfortable. That's because in our culture, the connection between religion and money gets a bit tricky. I suspect that many of us see money and spirituality as kind of operating in different worlds. And when those boundaries get blurred, we get a bit squeamish. And there's a good reason for this. Think about this other passage from Christian scripture that you often hear in popular culture. For wherever your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This passage makes it sound like sort of an either-or proposition. Do we put our faith in our spiritual values, or do we put it in our material values? This juxtaposition between the spiritual and material is a cultural norm, even if we don't consciously affirm it. It's in the air. And these days, that juxtaposition is an important part of our Unitarian Universalist tradition. A lot of our justice work has a financial dimension to it. And that's because systemic discrimination, which we're often fighting against, systemic discrimination results in economic inequality and marginalization. Economic inequality and marginalization, we run up against that again and again. Now, that's not to say that we feel that money is the root of all evil, but in the context of a faith community, there's definitely a certain ambivalence there. Stewardship season also brings up another sticky issue, the idea of institutional religion. And this discomfort is part of our UU history. Historically, many of our early Unitarian and Universalist churches were part of the congregational movement. These were churches that did not want to be part of some greater hierarchy that told them what to believe or how to manage their affairs. And today, that spirit of independence is even stronger. UUs affirm the value of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And so this principle attracts a lot of people who identify themselves as being spiritual but not religious. And often when someone says they are spiritual but not religious, when they say religious, they're associating that with institutional religion. There's a sense that once religion takes an institutional form, it's bound to be corrupted with material concerns and its spirituality compromised. And the sad truth, of course, is this does happen. We've seen this in the news over and over. Leaders of a religious organization become more concerned with perpetuating that organization than with serving the needs of its members or with doing justice work in the world. Such institutions might be financially solvent, but they're spiritually bankrupt. And this is what can happen when the boundary is blurred between spiritual and material concerns, spiritual bankruptcy. And yet, here we are in stewardship season. And this is when the financial material dimensions of this community come to the forefront. And if we're uncomfortable with this blurring of boundaries, this is when we get uncomfortable. This is when we get uncomfortable because there is no escaping the fact that 45% of our budget goes to renting and maintaining this facility. That's more than $150,000 over the course of a year. And another $62,000 goes to providing worship services and $55,000 to supporting our religious education programs. Those are some cold, hard numbers. This is what it takes to be a community. This is what it takes to keep the lights on. This is what it takes to worship together and to provide our children with a meaningful religious education program. And it takes an institution to make it happen. There's no avoiding that. But stewardship season invites us to think both about our money and our institution in a different way. Because when it comes to supporting our faith community, money is not something that's separate from our spiritual lives. Instead, it is an integral part of our spiritual lives. The philosopher Jacob Needleman wrote this marvelous book called Money and the Meaning of Life. And in this book, he reflects on the way in which our spiritual concerns and financial concerns seem to exist in two very different spheres. But this is an illusion. Money, he writes, is actually a key to what we value. If you want to know where someone finds meaning in life, look at where they spend their money. Our lives take on deeper meaning when we are intentional about how we use our money, when we make conscious choices, choices that reflect our most deeply held values. We gather as a community around shared values, and our financial support for this community helps to express those values in a more powerful way than we could do individually. The institution is a manifestation of our shared vision. Its task is to serve as a steward of the resources needed to achieve that vision. That is what this institution is. That is what the board of trustees is. That's what the financial committee is. This is a manifestation of our shared vision, here to serve as stewards of our resources so that we can realize that vision. And this involves a different way of thinking about our financial investments. Because when it comes to stewardship, how do we decide if our investment is a wise one? Is it enough to know that we keep the lights on? Is it enough to know that we can put new carpet up here and make other improvements? Or that we can have beautiful music or meaningful worship services? That's all very important, but it's not enough. Stewardship ultimately is about building the world we believe in. And that makes it a little more difficult to measure the return on our investment. I actually got a taste of this while I was attending Wesley Theological Seminary. Most of the time, I would eat in the cafeteria once, twice, or even three times a week using meal tickets that we were given at the beginning of a semester. Inevitably, every now and then, I would forget my meal tickets, and I wouldn't have enough cash to pay for the food. But every time, a fellow student would step forward and hand me a meal ticket. The first couple times this happened, I kind of saw this as, oh, this is a debt. I have to repay this debt, you know, and I carried it with me. But I actually came to learn that it didn't really work that way. People did not look for that debt to be repaid. Instead, they assumed that next time I saw someone else in a similar plight, I would give them my ticket. I would pay it forward. And at first, this felt kind of strange. But in time, I really came to embrace this way of thinking. Even though there were, you know, money involved in these interactions, these weren't transactional relationships. There was no system of credit and debt in the cafeteria. We weren't running tabs. Instead, we were building a community of mutual support and sustenance. This community was based on an economy of faith. Faith in the ultimate value of loving community. An economy of faith. And this is what we see at work in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Why in the world would the Samaritan go above and beyond in caring for the wounded man, asking the innkeeper to spend whatever was needed? What was he hoping to get for his money? In caring for the wounded man in this way, the Samaritan had shifted into an economy of faith. He was investing in a vision of the world in which Samaritans and Jews might see one another as neighbors. It wouldn't happen in his lifetime, but he was putting his money on it. And that's what we do during stewardship season. This is what we're asked to do. We are asked to invest our money in the vision of this community. we are asked to enter into this economy of faith, an economy built around a vision. At the heart of that vision here is a proposition that we repeat each week at the close of our service. And it's the same proposition at the heart of the parable of the Good Samaritan. I invite you to listen to it now with fresh ears. This church is dedicated to the proposition that behind all our differences and beneath all our diversities, there is a unity that binds us together and makes us one in spite of time and death and the space between the stars. When we give money to this community, when we give money to this institution, we are investing in a vision of the world in which this unity is recognized and celebrated. We may not see that unity realized during our lifetimes, but we are putting our money on it. To achieve that vision, yes, we need a physical space, we need electricity, we need a minister, an RE director, maybe even an intern. But as we move toward the end of the stewardship season, let us keep our sights on this higher vision, this vision of unity. May that vision sustain us as we seek to sustain this community. May it be so. Amen.